Hello, and welcome to this live broadcast of The Peace Frequency, a podcast series brought to you by the United States Institute of Peace Global Campus. I am your host, Darren Cambridge. Through this podcast, we bring together scholars, practitioners, activists, and learners from across the globe to discuss and debate the important work of building peace in our time. This show and the online courses around which each episode is based seeks to prepare individuals around the world to prevent and transform violent conflict. You can learn more about the Global Campus at usipglobalcampus.org. Throughout the month of January, the USIP Global Campus has been offering the course Community-Based Peacebuilding, Engaging Youth. And this week, we've been exploring the theme, There Are Many Ways to Be a Peacebuilder. And particular emphasis has been given to the role of arts in peacebuilding. So today on the show, we are going to continue on this theme. What do arts-based approaches to peacebuilding look like? How can music and culture provide alternatives to violence and help communities reconstruct identities that have been shaped by violent conflict? I am joined on the phone by my co-host, Dr. Allison Milofsky. Allison is Director of Curriculum and Training Design here at USIP and is also the main instructor in the Community-Based Peacebuilding course. She has been co-hosting the show with me during the month of January. Allison, as always, it's great to have you co-hosting the show.
Thanks, Darren. I'm happy to be here.
And our guest on the phone joining us from his home in Medellin, Colombia, is Jeff Guerra. Jeff is a DJ, producer, and host of Jack Radio, a weekly FM radio show broadcast from the University of Antioquia in Medellin, Colombia. Originally from Los Angeles, California, he moved to Colombia in 2008 at the height of the country's cultural renaissance. Immediately inspired by its transformation narrative, he founded Jack Magazine to document the people and the projects that were driving Colombia's historic shift from drugs and violence to culture and education. One of the talented groups for which Jeff is both a DJ and a producer is a group called Explosión Negra, or Black Explosion. And we're going to hear more from Jeff about the work that he and this group have been doing to combat violence and promote positive social identities among young people. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us from Colombia today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
And lastly, as always, we invite you, our many listeners tuning in online from around the world, to chime in with your questions and your comments and help us guide this conversation and engage with our guest. Our producer, Kara Stevens, will be moderating your questions and comments, and Kara is in the studio with us today. Can you say hello to our friends online?
Hi, everyone. We look forward to your comments and questions.
So when you have a question or a comment, all you need to do is notify Kara by clicking the little raise hand button that you'll see on your control panel, and Kara will get you queued up. She will let you know when you're about to go on air, and then she'll unmute you and bring you into the show so you can share your question and your comment directly. Now, if you do not have a microphone on your computer, you can also instant message Kara by typing your question and your comment into the chat box, which is also on your control panel, and then Kara can read it for you on air. So let's get this party started. Jeff, we have begun all of the shows associated with Allison's course with an introductory exercise called 3-2-1, and it helps us and it helps our listeners get to know our guests. All the students in the course actually participated in this exercise as well, so you are now invited to participate in this exercise. Allison, why don't you go ahead and walk Jeff through this 3-2-1 exercise?
Sure. So the 3-2-1 introductions asks you to respond to three questions. The first is, what are three things people might be surprised to learn about you? The second is, what are two things that you're passionate about? And the third is, what's one quote that you try to live by?
Okay, so the three things that people might be surprised to learn about me. It's a little bit tough because I think that's a contextual question. Obviously, people are, they've got to have some pre-existing opinion to be surprised,
true,
right?
True,
so I'll keep it simple. First, even though I live a pretty healthy lifestyle here in Colombia, I do love French fries.
All right.
Second, I once worked on tour with Cirque du Soleil.
Which Cirque du Soleil? There's like 1,000 of them these days.
There are. I worked on the second North American tour, which was called Saltimbanco.
Oh.
That was in the early 90s.
Cool.
And third, I think pretty much everything I've learned or accomplished or done in my career and professional life has been self-taught. That tends to surprise people.
All right.
And then let's see, two things that I'm passionate about, right?
Yep.
Two things I'm passionate about. I would say making or discovering and sharing great music that I find, that I come across, or that gets sent to me. And then second is finding and building any sort of meaningful connections, especially intercultural. And then last one, a great quote, right? A great quote that I respond to or live by, kind of thing. I'm going to go with "To thine own self be true," Shakespeare.
All right. I like it. Well, thank you for that introduction, Jeff. And actually, as was mentioned at the start of today's podcast, the theme of this show and of the course this entire week is that there are many ways to be a peace builder. And we're looking forward to hearing about the various ways that you've chosen to be a peace builder through music. But first, I want to give you, Allison, a chance to unpack this theme for us, our listeners, and for Jeff a little bit, and tell us about also the Peace Building Toolkit for Educators, which is what your course is structured around. So, Allison, what does this theme, "There are many ways to be a peace builder," mean, and why is it one of the key themes in the Peace Building Toolkit for Educators?
So the structure of the toolkit really, we start out with participants thinking about peace and conflict, what these concepts mean to them, and then we give them the skills, conflict analysis, conflict styles, active listening, so that they can sort of develop the skills within the classroom or within an educational space and put those into practice in their communities. But we also want them to be thinking about how they can use all of these skills in a proactive, not just in a reactive way. And so that leads us to this third theme, which is that there are many ways to be a peace builder. And really, how do you take all of these skills and do something, put them all together for your community or for a greater community to build peace? And the reason it's framed as "there are many ways to be a peace builder" is because we often hear from young people that, I'm just one person, what can I do? And we want people to understand that peace builders are not born, they emerge based on conscious choices that they make throughout their lives. And we want them to understand that even small acts that they do in their daily lives can contribute to peace. So there isn't one way of being a peace builder. It's a process. It requires proactive and active engagement by all individuals. It's not just masses of people who can do it, but as individuals, we can do things in our lives. So I think it's helpful for them to understand that it's important for us to think about peace within ourselves, within our local communities, and we don't have to be thinking about conflicts, international conflicts, to be thinking of ourselves as peace builders. We have to bring it down to what resonates and what we can do at a local level as well. So we want them to be thinking in a range of ways of what it means to be a peace builder and the ways that they can act at multiple levels as peace builders.
And Jeff, this week in the course, we actually highlighted a Colombian pop star, Juanes, who's also from Medellin.
Right.
And so just a great coincidence that we're bringing two Colombian musicians together in this conversation. But, that's a great example of someone who doesn't necessarily have the word peace builder in his title, but still has done amazing peace building work. And we've actually asked participants in the course to learn a bit more about him and the peace concerts that he has been a part of. And then after learning about him, everyone was asked to respond to the following questions. And we'd love you, Jeff, to jump into this conversation. The first question is, how do you feel arts can effectively communicate a message of peace?
Well, I want to pick up on something that I just heard Allison say. It was a really critical phrase. She said, being proactive instead of reactive. And I think I'm going to pick up on that and talk maybe more about artists, how artists can communicate a message of peace, maybe instead of arts, which I think when we talk about arts, it's a bit more, it can be a bit more vague or objective. So to make it personal and to make it impactful and more subjective, I think an artist first has to be honest about how branding and marketing works today and basically what people are accustomed to hearing and experiencing. I mean, independent artists today are competing with Coca-Cola and Disney and everyone else who creates content in the world. So really a nice message, no matter how nice or how well constructed it may be, it's not enough. I think artists have to focus on quality of their work in order to be impactful. It's got to be clever, it's got to be original, and it's got to be well done. And I would add on to that, an artist also has to convey somehow, some way, authenticity. For example, it can be addressing his or her position of privilege, or it can be speaking about his or her unique circumstances where they're based, the types of governments, oppression that are going on, things like that. I think for me personally, communicating a message of peace means addressing some of the precursors of violence, promoting a positive lifestyle. I mean, this is something that you have to create this alternative option in an intoxicating way, because the truth is, as an artist, I'm competing with some other artists out there who are singing about easy money and that can be really seductive for young kids with few other realistic options.
And what have been some of those, clever, meaningful messages that you're talking about that are able to capture the branding talent of some of these other mega corporations, or as you just mentioned, some of these other artists who provide an intoxicating opportunities or way of life for young people. What are some examples of a message that is an alternative to that yet is still intoxicating?
Well, we have that. There's that phrase that comes from hip hop that I love: flip the switch. And sometimes you can co-opt maybe a piece or an image or a style from, let's say, hip hop culture, and the words that you're saying, instead of talking about easy money or instead of talking about violence, you can, have a really clever and really unique way of speaking that sounds like, oh, this is an artistic thing. And if you've got a great rhyme style and if you've got great beats behind it, this is something of quality. It's got credibility, it's got artistic credibility, and it's resonating with young people. So that's the clever part, that's the original part. But then your message can be a completely different one. And it doesn't matter if people are memorizing your lyrics or not. I think that stuff tends to stick, even in subconscious. If you've got a great message, well constructed, and it's following the heart, it arrives.
Mm-hmm. Allison, that actually reminds me of an activity that I think you've referenced in the course, or at least with me, about having young people creating their own peace slogans or their own peace bumper stickers. Maybe you could share with us what that exercise is and what are some connections between what you're hearing Jeff say and that exercise.
There are a couple of different ways that I've done it. One is actually, I think it's in the lesson that we've developed to accompany the Juanes video, when we invite people to create a concert for peace and think about the artists that they would, what's the message that they want that concert to communicate to people. And so they have to come up with a sort of a motto. Some of what I'm hearing is actually part of that. It's being clear and concise in the messaging. It's not just about the medium. It's not just about having the music as a medium. It's being sure that the message that you're communicating is clear. So it's having them come up with a really brief way of putting their ideas, their key ideas together. So sometimes it's what's your bumper sticker for the world, and sometimes it's what's your motto, or it could be in this context, it's what's going to be on your banner or on your promotional materials for this concert for peace. But it's really about helping them to figure out what their message is and hone that message and put it together in a way that will stick with people.
That's great. And to our listeners, we encourage you to jump in with your questions or comments for our guest, Jeff Guerra, about music, about message, about peace building. We'd love to hear from you. Now, Jeff, you have many titles and you wear many hats. You are a DJ. You are a producer. You are a radio show host, and I'm probably missing some other hats. But I want you to take us back to before you wore any of these hats, before you had any of these titles. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood? Where did you grow up? What was your childhood a musical one? And was it one that embraced and celebrated your roots?
Oh, should I lie down for this one?
I'm burning incense right now, so you can.
I grew up in Los Angeles during the crack wars in a neighborhood that was basically split. It was a turf war going on between Black and Latino gangs. And that gave me a sort of unique perspective on what the world looked like and what was possible. But something that I'm very, very thankful for was I was actually able to watch the transition. And I wasn't completely aware of, you know, I couldn't articulate exactly what was going on at the time. But I remember in retrospect, I remember watching literally from one day to the next, seeing kids separated on the playground by race. I remember seeing groups of white kids in one corner and the Latino kids were over there, and the Black kids were over there, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember it was very, very quick when I saw that dissolve, and it almost all happened at the same time. And it was the arrival of a couple of very, very strong African-American cultural icons that did it. It was the arrival of hip hop as a culture. And in that I would include music, fashion, and definitely breakdancing. And then also the crossover appeal, major crossover appeal of Michael Jackson, which obviously we've had other musicians and pop stars over the years before him who had some crossover appeal. But I think, I don't know, it's difficult to say because I wasn't around back then, but I saw something happen that wasn't happening before, which was, you know, kids going over to each other's houses from different races. And we were doing breakdancing together at lunchtime at school. And we were trading, you know, you would listen, there was a really good hip hop show on Sunday nights in Los Angeles. And we would record those shows on cassette tape. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go to school on Monday and you'd trade, you know, some people had more of them than others, and everyone had to trade them to get, you know, the shows that we missed. And so there were these sort of cultural icons that came from African American culture, but we all shared them. And, you know, I know it sounds a little bit idealistic and utopian and all that, but I watched some very serious racial divisions break down very, very quickly through culture.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Michael Jackson. Just yesterday, actually, I was brought to tears. and actually, this isn't the first time it's happened to me, but Michael Jackson's song, The Earth Song, the music video itself, I think, is one of the most powerful music videos ever made. His live performances of it, like his live performance of pretty much all of the songs, but this one, if we're talking about music and peace building and messages of peace building, Michael Jackson's Earth Song, I think, is one of the best ones out there. And actually, that was the last song that Michael Jackson ever performed before he died in 2009. And yeah, so I really take your point on kind of Michael Jackson's crossover appeal. And then, yeah, this idea of hip hop as a culture, I mean, it's one of the most widespread, embraced global cultures that began and had its roots in African American culture here in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit more about what do you think it is about hip hop culture? First of all, you mentioned a couple of things, fashion, style, music, all those things. What is it about that culture that you think resonates with so many people across cultures?
Well, what tends to happen, I think, when you get an emergence hip hop culture in a country, like you mentioned, you know, it's an African American invention, and it really is. I mean, it's born in the Bronx, but today you can look at there are thriving hip hop scenes everywhere. And I mean, I get sent stuff all the time from. I mean, I have Sudanese hip hop that like samples, you know, Sufi instrumentation, and there's all this. It's unbelievable. It's the amount of variety in the genre, and I think what resonates with people is it's always been protest music. It's always been a way to talk about what's going on in my neighborhood. It's basically, I think it has the impact of what poetry maybe had at the height of literature.
So getting into your music interests, your music career, what kind of things did you do actually professionally before you took on music as a profession?
Oh man.
Maybe I've done so many. Top three.
I've done so many things. So, okay. I've done a lot of freelance editing and writing, and I was chief editor of a monthly cultural magazine here in Colombia. In the States, I worked in human resources for a few different companies, and I was also a day trader for several years.
Wow.
Beat that.
I'm surprised. You should have put that in your title. I mean, surprise there. Jeff Guerra, day trader, would not have pegged you for that.
Well, you know, when you got to get out of the hood, you got to make some money.
True, true. Okay, so then when did you first get involved in DJing, beat making, and what got you interested in that art form specifically?
Well, I started messing around as a DJ in the early 2000s, but only began really taking it seriously around 2007 while I was traveling in South America for the first time. I wanted to work with music somehow once I decided to live here in Colombia. I wanted to participate in what I saw as a cultural renaissance, and I wanted to participate through music and culture in that way. And so I started DJing and listening to other people, what they were doing, researching more about Colombian music, and particularly Afro-Colombian music, which is the most unique type of rhythms that come out of the country. And then I began doing my radio show soon thereafter and began producing Explosión Negra. And I've worked on several other musical projects in addition to Explosión Negra. And I co-produced original music for a musical here based on an adaptation of a children's novel called Barrio de Medellín. I think the interest in producing music here has been looking for a way to contribute. This is we'll talk about this Renaissance thing more, I imagine, but I really believe that we're in a unique place at a unique moment in history in here in Colombia. And this is just sort of my way to participate in that, not just be an observer.
We have a question or a comment from one of our listeners. So, Kara, take it away.
This question is from Nuha. She asks, what made you choose to move to Colombia specifically?
Okay. So when I first came here, I was just traveling around South America. I had no intention of moving here. And when I got to Colombia, I fell madly in love with the country. I didn't know exactly why, but I knew there was something special going on here. And so I spent my first few months here just trying to figure out what that was, observing, paying attention. And after a while, I sort of figured out what it was. And you know, I've always liked history and reading about these unique moments in our human past when a specific place was unique for some reason. Like you could say United States after the Civil War, or you could say Spain after Franco, or the Italian Renaissance in Florence. There are moments after some sort of political unrest or oppression or violence when there's just an explosion, a boom of culture, when people had to stay indoors for fear of violence or whatever, and there was no communication or expression. And then suddenly things become, you know, the lid gets lifted. People can come outside, and now all the artists come out, and you see all kinds of activity, cultural activity going on. And when I got here in 2008, that's exactly what was going on. And we're sort of at the tail end of that, I would say, right now, the peak of it. But that's why I decided to move here, because I thought this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to participate in community building, basically. It's basically, we can look at what's been going on in Egypt in the last few years, and maybe we can project 5-10 years from now, they might be in the same sort of situation.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of amazing artists who'd been around for a while, but have emerged as a result of, you know, the revolutionary spirit that has, you know, swept across Egypt. Now, I'm still facing seriously tough and depressing times, but there was a vibrant musical community that kind of forged out of that. So I think that is a really good example. I want to go back to this idea of the cultural renaissance and this explosion, and also to something you said about hip-hop culture and other artists and their message. Because I don't think everyone would agree that, you know, music writ large unifies people or has positive messages. You alluded to that. I don't think everyone would agree that hip-hop culture necessarily promotes a positive lifestyle, as you mentioned earlier. So not necessarily looking for a history lesson per se, but what do you think the dynamics are at play where you can take, you know, hip-hop culture or hip-hop music, and in one example, you see it as building community, unifying folks across races, as in your example. But then on the other hand, you've got beefs that erupt across various individuals or groups that are in the hip-hop culture, East Coast, West Coast, you name it. And then obviously rapping or singing or promoting messages that don't necessarily put forward a positive lifestyle. why that division, and how do you work to kind of sway or influence hip hop culture to be more on the positive tip?
Well, I don't know. I would sort of limit this topic to hip hop, because I think a lot of what you just explained goes on in art in general. And talking about there's a lot of hip hop. The word, that phrase carries a lot of connotation because of, you know, things that have happened, and that I think it's a cute media story to tie that stuff in. And there were all kinds of racial dynamics and sociocultural dynamics that got tied into that. I think at some points, it was unfair to rope that into it. So I don't know. I don't really feel like an expert to talk about hip hop's role and how I should change it, et cetera, et cetera. But I do a lot of work with artists here in Colombia, especially Afro-Colombian artists. And very few of them are pure hip hop bands. So what I really try to do is, rather than say, okay, focus on a positive message, you know, don't focus on negative stuff, it's more about, what stories do you want to be out there? How do you want to represent yourself? What is it that you're trying to share with people about you? Now, if you want to have a career as an artist these days, you've got to foster a relationship with fans. We can't just think that we can go and create content and people are going to buy it. You know, content's free now. Movies are free. Music is free. So what are you selling anymore? If you want to sustain a musical career as an artist, you better have a relationship with your fans. So that means you have to talk about your experiences, your identity, your culture, and then hope that that resonates and try to build connections in that way. Mm-hmm. So rather than saying, you know, you need to be positive, don't talk about this, it's tell your story. And I think invariably when we do that, I mean, storytelling is a powerful, powerful thing. It's the way that, you know, going back to Native American tribes, going back to Africa, this is the way that education has always been passed down. It's sitting around the campfire, telling stories. And all of these arts that we're talking about, you know, hip hop in particular is a really good storytelling medium. The best MCs, I think, are just great storytellers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was dancing around the question a little bit, but
No, not at all, not at all. But it actually reminded me of another kind of key learning, teaching guideline in the Peace Building Toolkit for Educators. And Allison, I know in session one you talked about the importance of telling stories and turning statistics into actual people and understanding the stories and individuals behind those statistics. Could you kind of review that for us in terms of what you mean by that and why you think this skill of telling your story, being able to tell your story and hear other stories, is such an integral part of peace building?
Yeah, Ed, what you're saying, Jeff, really resonates for me. I read, I don't have the quote in front of me, but the essence of the quote is that stories nourish the soul. That, you know, that's throughout history. It's just how stories are how we pass on traditions and experiences from one, and that sense of communal knowledge and understanding, whether it's a family or a greater community. But what's within the toolkit, what's important is that stories help us identify with individuals. So we can, you know, as I frame it in the toolkit, it's, you know, I can give you this statistic that there are X number of child soldiers in the world. Let's say it's 300,000. I don't even know how accurate that is anymore. The dated statistic, but that's overwhelming. What does that even mean for me if I'm from a place where I don't even think, the concept of child soldiers doesn't come into my life on a daily basis? What does it then mean for me when I hear the story of child soldiers trying to reintegrate in his community and find his family? What does that mean when I learn that this child soldier, before he became a child soldier, was just a kid who liked to play soccer or football, and that's something that I like? And so it allows us to form these human connections and understand that what's happening in other parts of the world maybe isn't, you know, so remote, and it allows us to see that there is this interconnectivity around the world, and so what we're also trying to do is take this an abstract idea and make it concrete, make it really understandable and digestible for young people when they're not thinking about such issues on a daily basis. And for people who are experiencing conflict, the ability to tell their story well, to craft their story and understand the use of emotion and what their emotions are and how do they use their emotions to tell their story. It's so tied into what Jeff is talking about with being authentic and being original. It's using your own personal story to communicate a greater message or a part of a message.
You are listening to The Peace Frequency, a weekly podcast series brought to you by the United States Institute of Peace Global Campus. Each week, we bring together scholars, practitioners, activists, and learners from across the globe to discuss and debate the important work of building peace in our time. You can learn more about the Global Campus at usipglobalcampus.org. Today on the show, we're looking at the theme, there are many ways to be a peace builder, and in particular, arts-based approaches to peace building. And our guest today is Jeff Guerra. He is a DJ, a producer, and a radio show host, and he's joining us from his home in Medellin, Colombia. And Jeff, you have mentioned the group Explosión Negra, and Explosión Negra actually came to USIP a few months ago and performed here, and it was an amazing experience. So I will say my experience in hearing that was a powerful one, because these were sounds or a fusion of sounds that I'd never experienced before. But I want to hear about your first experience when you heard Explosión Negra, Jeff. You know, where were you? What was around you? And of course, what did you hear the first time you heard them play or you saw them perform? And what went through your body when you first experienced their music?
Well, I was writing, I was actually editing an edition of the magazine, and we were focusing on Afro-Colombian culture. And I was looking for a few bands to highlight, to talk about. I didn't really know a lot about Afro-Colombian music and culture at that time. And I'd seen, you know, some of the people around, but really not integrated with the rest of the city. So I asked around and found a place to go and went to, I eventually found a festival that was a little bit outside of the city. And I saw several bands, and, you know, a lot of them were doing stuff that I thought, you know, I've already heard this a million times. They were doing commercial reggaeton, or they were playing salsa, you know, typical Latin sounds that you hear across the entire continent. And then these guys came and they played, I think, 7 or 8 songs, Explosión Negra. And most of them were the same kind of thing, you know, ballads and salsa and reggaeton and some dance hall. But then they played one song towards the end that had some rhythms that I was not familiar with. And I thought, what? I mean, as a musician, I thought, what is that? I want to sample that. I want to work with it. What is that thing? So I went to talk with them afterwards and asked them about it. And they said, oh, yeah, this is a, you know, this is Corolao. This is a style of music that comes from the Pacific coast here in Colombia. And I said, why aren't you guys playing all that? Just do a concert of only that. And they said, well, people here don't really like that stuff. And I said, forget them. Forget them. I mean, this is like a few thousand people here in Colombia. There's millions outside who want to hear this stuff. So anyway, that conversation led to me showing up at their rehearsal and, you know, them having them play me a bunch more of their sort of more rootsy, authentic rhythms, and we began working together more to evolve those sounds in, let's say, maybe more of an international sort of context, so that we started targeting their sound for more of an international audience instead of trying to capture Colombian crowds that just want to hear, you know, the stuff that's commercially important here.
Right. So what was that first experience when you started to take this kind of unique sound international? How did that process begin? Where did you go? Where did you take these sounds? And how did people outside of Colombia receive their performances and their music?
Well, one thing I wasn't aware of was in some of the most progressive circles in, let's say, club culture in the United States and in Europe at that time. And we're talking again about, I'm going to say 2009, 2010. At that point, Afro-Colombian rhythms had already made a significant impact in these progressive places. And I'm talking about the best clubs in New York, in London, in Paris, in D.C. So a lot of that stuff, you know, things like Totoro Mompocina or Petrona Martinez, these are major, you know, Afro-Colombian artists, were being remixed by, you know, innovative producers and DJs around the world. So that stuff was definitely making it outside of the country. It's just that it's not highly respected here in some of the bigger cities in Colombia. And so my thought was, but one thing that does happen, I think, and this is common in all the developing world, is there's this sort of low self-esteem thing that happens with their own arts. You know, it's sort of like if it's not validated by the outside world, it must not be very good. Mm-hmm. which is nonsense, obviously, but what tends to happen is maybe an artist like Juanes becomes really, really famous outside, and then all of a sudden everyone goes bananas and adopts the person like they've always been a fan, you know, fan number one of Juanes. Well, they never went to the concerts when he was just playing a little club down the street, but but if you win a Grammy, suddenly it's validated and everyone goes. So The strategy that I sort of put together for these guys was let's start focusing on generating this international sound. Let's start sending this stuff to these great remixers and producers. Let's get into some of these parties so that those kinds of people can start hearing us and then sharing our music with an open crowd. And we started doing that, got great feedback and responses, and then we put together a tour. Our first tour was in 2011, the first North American tour. And we played, I think it was 10 different cities, mostly on the East Coast in the U.S. And then we went to Nashville, Tennessee.
Nice.
And the structure of the tours, we do a kind of a unique structure because the idea is not just to go and do a concert, but to actually, we've put together a multimedia presentation that talks about the arrival of Afro-descendant people to Colombia and then how Afro-Colombian culture developed from that and then how these musical forms developed from that culture and then obviously how we as a modern Afro-Colombian bands interpret and evolve those sounds. And we do this primarily, we've done it primarily so far in African-American universities, HBCUs in the U.S., because it shows this pronoun. I mean, Allison was talking about trying to connect stories, and there's nothing, I mean, I can tell you so many stories about being in a class of, you know, 80 or 90 African-American students and sharing these tales, and you see people's eyes, just people are melting. They can't believe the same thing was going on another continent with the same timeline, and we're playing rhythms that have evolved independently, but they have the same African root. I mean, we have song, there's a musical form we have called alabao, which is from the Southern Pacific Coast region, and we've sung alabaos with gospel choirs in the United States, because it's the rhythm that basically the African spirituals that arrived to the American South, which formed later gospel and R&B and all these forms we know today, those same African rhythm roots are what formed alabao.
Wow.
So when you see it unfolding live right in front of you, there are these gospel singers who are 19, 20 years old singing in Spanish a phrase that we taught them, call and response, like the Southern Church. But it's in Spanish. It's from another culture. Talk about bridge building.
Totally, totally. That's an amazing story. You know, it kind of goes to kind of what my next question was going to be is, you know, what is it about their music, Explosión Negra's music and their performances that you feel helps build peace? These stories have been amazing. What about helping build peace in Medellin and being part of that cultural renaissance you referred to? So what is it about their music and performances in Medellin that addresses some of those challenges in that city?
Well, the one that we've chosen to focus on is social division. We've got, I mean, it's a very complicated conversation right now, and there are many causes. Principal among these, there's a heavy amount of displacement going on in Colombia, has been, and that's driven by, there's a massive gold rush going on in Colombia right now. There are just billions of dollars in unmined gold in the country, and that's become the new source of funding for some of the bad guys. So some of those organizations that were previously relying on drug trade or kidnapping to finance their operations, they've now moved on to illegal mining or strong-arming local politicians. Mm-hmm. And so displacement, inevitably, it's in these rural areas that are heavily either Afro-Colombian or indigenous. And so a lot of these people who've been displaced, they've basically got no voice. They've got no advocates looking out for them right now. And it's not no. There is some activity to counter this. But this in combination with some other social dynamics leads to a very strong social divide that runs along class, basically, the haves and the have-nots. And class in Colombia and in much of Latin America, class and race run parallel. And so what ends up happening is some of these Afro-Colombian and indigenous art forms, they're diminished in terms of their national value. So maybe people will go, let's say non-Afro-Colombian people will go and they'll applaud and they'll see a concert and they'll think, oh yeah, this is nice, but they're not all having dinner together. So I think what Explosión Negra and other Afro-Colombian bands can do right now is elevate the profile of Afro-Colombian culture and music, and therefore the identity and the pride, which then obviously addresses that social divide. I mean, what we would like to have in the near future is a point when we're looking at things like rhythms like Corolao or Chirimia or Bullerengue, some of these beautiful Afro-Colombian rhythms. And at some point, we won't say they're Afro-Colombian. We'll just say they're Colombian. And this is basically what has happened with African-based music in the United States. I mean, we don't call jazz African-American music anymore.
True.
We don't even call hip-hop really African-American music anymore.
True. Although I will say, I mean, this, we don't want to go off on a tangent, but I don't know if you've been following the Iggy Azalea Banks feud over, you know, co-optation of what is an African-American art form, and then where credit goes. We don't need to jump into that, but there's
some... I love how Azalea Banks says that when she stole a beat from one of my friends in South America, made a Dominican, half Dominican guy, made a beat that she just stole without crediting him. And it's ironic she should be talking about that.
Right. Yeah, no, I think when we get into sampling and you know, remixing, you know, it creates so many beautiful, wonderful, amazing sounds and brings us back to previous songs that were part of our childhood, and then we're hearing them in a new way, but it raises all these, you know, every now and then it raises or bubbles up, you know, people's critique of, well, is that an original sound? And, you know, I'm on the side of absolutely it's original sound. It's remixed and it's sampled. But, you know, sometimes various buttons are pushed depending on what you're sampling and who gets credit for what resampled or remixed song or what have you. But let's go back to Explosión Negra. You've been mentioning some of their specific sounds. And actually in some of other times I've heard you talk about their music, you've talked about there's a Afro-Colombian sound and musical tradition from the Atlantic coast that's distinct from the Afro-Colombian sound and musical tradition in the Pacific coast. And so what I'd like to do is you sent us a song, an original song by Explosión Negra that we'd love to play here. We'll play just a few seconds of it, and then maybe you could tell us about what are we hearing, or what did we hear in this sample from the song. So we're going to get this queued up and ready to go. And actually, while we're doing that, can you tell us the name of the song and maybe a little bit of background on it?
Sure. The song is called Bembe. It's a brand new single, and Bembe goes back to an African tradition. It's a call to dance, essentially, and it's unique in the sense that it's one of the songs where we've tried to combine some of the instrumentations and rhythms from the two coasts. There aren't a lot of artists who do that, who combine the two rhythms. They are distinct, as you mentioned, and there is some sort of like regional beef there between the two.
Okay. All right.
There in and of itself is a bit of a statement.
Okay, great. All right, we'll put it on now. Okay, Jeff. So tell us, what did we just hear?
So Bembe, the elements that I think we would associate with the two coasts, primarily it's instrumentation and how the instruments are played. So you heard a couple of different types of horns in there, and I don't know if the listeners were able to distinguish between those, you know, the way that we music nerds do. But there was a clarinet there, And clarinet is very strong in Pacific Coast music, and there's a very distinct way of playing it, especially in the northern Pacific Coast. And it sounds a lot like New Orleans street jazz, mm-hmm. because once again, same West African root of both New Orleans street jazz and this rhythm called chirimia, which is associated with the northern Pacific Coast. So those sort of like flying clarinet sounds that you hear, whether it's just jumping all over the place, that's very Pacific. And then there's another wind instrument called a gaita, which is a very long and very thin, narrow tubular flute. And it's made out of a local wood from the Atlantic coast. And the gaita is more associated with cumbia. It's a wind instrument you'll hear a lot in cumbia, which is a very much an Atlantic coast rhythm. And then the other sort of differentiation is in the shakers. I don't know if everyone can hear it, but then there are these shaker instruments here called, it's called a guasa. And guasa can be made of either metal or bamboo type wood. And then there are seeds inside of it. So you shake it, much like, you know, you hear shekede instruments in Africa. And the rhythms that you play with these shaker instruments to accompany the melody and the percussion, it's a little different on the Atlantic coast versus the Pacific coast. So we try to use both of those rhythms in terms of the accompaniment to, again, sort of make a statement about stop with this division. There's beauty if you can combine these things and search for new kinds of bridges, as Allison alluded to earlier.
That's great. And where would our listeners go to learn more about Explosión Negra, their music, and download their music, buy their music? Where would we go to find more information?
So it's like everything else. You just go any of the social media, YouTube, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter. If you just look up Explosión Negra, you'll find us everywhere.
Okay, great. We have some questions and comments from some of our listeners.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we'd like to start with a comment from Manuel. Earlier, Jeff, you talked about witnessing a sort of cultural boom after conflict, and you spoke about Colombia. Manuel says that he is from Guatemala, and he saw that kind of renaissance as well in the violent conflict in the 1980s and after that conflict. And if you have any experience about that, Jeff, he would love to hear your insight on that cultural renaissance going on in Central American countries. And then we have a question that opens it up more broadly. This is from Mary Kate for both Allison and Jeff. And she was asking that you have both been talking about the power of music and dance in helping cultures move towards peace. But what other artistic means have you seen hold a powerful effect on peace-building movements, both in your professional and your personal experiences?
We should probably let someone else talk about the Central American stuff. I don't know if Allison, maybe you know anything about that. I don't.
It's actually not my area. I don't. Central America. I can't speak to it. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, Manuel. I don't really know much about that conflict, other than, you know, what most of us have read about, you know, the role that certain Central American countries played in the drug trade. That's really my only experience or knowledge with all that. And I think in terms of addressing some of the other art forms in Colombia, and I think in Medellin in particular, we're in a little bit of a privileged situation right now because we've had some very innovative leadership locally over the past several years. And I say innovative because there's one man, Sergio Fajardo is his name. He was the mayor of Medellin during what most people consider to be the height of the transformation from violence and cartels into education and culture. And Fajardo he didn't come from a political background. He was an engineering professor, and his father was an architect. And Fajardo ran on this platform of the way we're going to get through all this is education and culture, and mostly social inclusion. That was his huge theme, was social inclusion. So they put in place a number of iconic infrastructural works. And principal among these were these sort of multifunctional library system. So they commissioned fantastic architects to build these very iconic works of design and place them in the poorest parts of the city. And these libraries, of course, they're libraries, but they also serve as community centers. and they have classes there where single mothers can go and learn about finances, and they have computers for kids, and they are, I mean, and they are in the poorest parts of the city. And that, I think, sends a very powerful message to the entire city, saying, listen, this is not another case where a developing country gets some money, they get some resources, and they just basically spiff up the nicest parts of the city for all the tourists to come and spend money. So if we're all in this together, and we're all going to move forward in this together, that sends a powerful message that no matter who you are, no matter what you do, you can take part in this thing. This is for you. So talking about artists now, we're talking about writers, musicians, there are a lot of dance collectives here now. And everyone, not everyone obviously, but many of them, and especially the younger kids, are for the first time looking inside of their own borders to take their inspiration, to take their cultural references. You know, when you build a work of art, whether it's dance or literature or music, you're using all this resource material to give you inspiration. And in many developing countries, definitely in Colombia, for so long, they've looked outside for inspiration. Because again, going back to that self-esteem thing, we always are here, there people are accustomed to thinking that the good stuff comes from outside. What we do is not the best quality in the world. But now we're starting to see that shift. We're starting to see artists like Juanes, Totoro Mompocina, some of these great Colombian artists are now leaving and experiencing, having a lot of success, making a major impact in the international arts community. And so some of these young artists are saying, you know what, I can start looking within my own borders now for inspiration. And they're choosing to build their works off of that source material. That, I think, is a magnificent part of this whole transformation narrative.
Allison, did you have thoughts on that question from our listener?
Well, there's so many. I'm just going to mention a couple. I mean, we always, because of the mission at the U.S. Institute of Peace, we always focus outside of our borders. But that's not to say that there's a great work happening, really significant work happening with message behind it in the U.S. And there's, you know, there was the Water Tower Project, which is in a couple of cities and reached New York City, where people were painting water towers and to promote water conservation. There, another one, and you can Google Russell Simmons. He had this whole Deaf Poetry Jam series and sort of taking off in the poetry slams, really powerful messages communicated through poetry with just addressing social issues in incredible ways and short. And I use them a lot as teaching tools to really, they're very provocative and they really get students to think about issues that they, the young people to think about issues that they hadn't thought, maybe a different perspective, and engages in some real, really powerful conversation. Then there's JR, who had his, he's an artist who had his project in the Middle East, Face to Face was one of his projects, in which, if I'm remembering correctly, he took Israelis, photos of Israelis and Palestinians who had the same profession, I believe. So he might take somebody who was a teacher, a Palestinian teacher and an Israeli teacher, and he would take giant I would take pictures of them and put them next to each other. And it was really a way for them to understand and see that how similar they are and the humanity in each other, and that they're, despite this conflict and despite this seemingly insurmountable divide, that they are so similar. And so in some cases it might have been around a profession, but it might have been inviting them, he might have asked them to express an emotion, and you'd see how these people from these different backgrounds, similar professions, would express emotions in either very different or similar ways. And again, there are so many projects about peace murals, and one I know of in Colombia, but just using art and graffiti, just so many different ways of putting art out there to communicate messages of peace.
Jeff, did you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for not citing some specific examples. Maybe I took the question too broadly there. But I would encourage people to, if they're interested in seeing maybe some concrete projects that are going on in the city of Medellin in this way. There's one that I always reference, which is there's a hip-hop band here called Crew Peligrosos, and they run a hip-hop school here. They're one of two hip-hop collectives that do this same thing and have been doing so for several years. They basically started an after-school program in, again, poorest part of the city, where traditionally gangs and cartels have recruited kids into their gangs. So they set up camp in these neighborhoods and have an after-school free program for kids to come in and learn the four elements of hip-hop. That is emceeing, DJing, breakdancing, and graffiti art. So kids come to school, and when they first started doing this several years back, I mean, they had six, seven kids who would come in, and they would, you know, sit down with them and teach them all the four elements of hip-hop as an alternative. You know, this is another career. The arts is another career you can look at, not just hip-hop, but the arts in general, and building character and self-empowerment and all these issues that are basically the things we have to address when we talk about how do we avoid kids going into gangs. So ultimately, they've now arrived at the point where each of these schools has several hundred kids who comes. These kids come to the classes every day, and you go on the. It's an actual school. The city has given them a school, because again, if you're doing something good here, the city has been so progressive. They've been working really hard to get things financed to make sure that concerts happen and that are free for people from poorer neighborhoods. Theater, a lot of theater here is free, so that it's sort of in the air. Culture and art as an alternative to violence is all around us. Like one of the famous stats here in the city is Medellin's city budget. 50% of the city budget is dedicated to education and culture.
Wow. We have a comment from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this comment is from Kristen. She says, thanks for those recommendations and examples. She also wants to recommend Centro Art para la Paz in Suchitoto, which is in El Salvador. And she says this is a great example of using arts to build a culture of peace after years of violence in a Central American country. And she shared the web address with me, and I will make sure to share that with all of you as well.
That's great. Thank you. And who was that?
Kristen.
Kristen. Thank you, Kristen. Well, Jeff, we have time for just one more question, and that is, what is your vision for peace for Medellin, or continued peace for Medellin and Colombia more broadly over the next 10 years, and what role do you see music playing in making that vision a reality?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is that Colombia's international profile is growing, is expanding. Many people have a very narrow perception of what Colombia is, and it's obviously going to draw from some of the heavy media influences from the 80s and 90s. But I think as that international profile grows and as people learn more about the country and where it is today, they're going to come and visit, and they're going to fall in love with particularly the country's Afro-Colombian and indigenous cultural elements. That's where the real gold here is. That's where the beauty, there's some amazing people here doing just phenomenal things. It's inevitable that people are going to fall in love with that. And I think this will lead to a greater local appreciation among Colombians at large, which in turn hopefully will foster pride in and celebration of these communities, helping to break this division that currently exists along class and social and race lines. And I think in terms of music's role there and in this process, it's maybe one of the largest in terms of where this is going to come from. And it's especially true if these young Afro-Colombian and indigenous artists continue to collaborate with their own elders, keep the oral tradition alive. That is what makes it unique.
That's great. Thank you, Jeff. You've been listening to The Peace Frequency, a weekly podcast series brought to you by the United States Institute of Peace Global Campus. Each week, we bring together scholars, practitioners, activists, and learners from around the world to discuss and debate the important work of building peace in our time. Our guest today has been Jeff Guerra. He's a DJ, a producer, and a radio show host calling us from Medellin, Colombia. He's doing amazing work with a variety of groups in Medellin, and he spent some time telling us about Explosión Negra and Afro-Colombian music. So, Jeff, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate you sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you all so much for having me. It's been great talking about this with your listeners.
So I've been your host, Darren Cambridge. Our producers are Leah Cullins and Vanessa Francis, and our on-air producer for today has been Kara Stevens. Our theme music is composed by Blake Mobley. Our graphic designer is Manuel Leon. Again, you've been listening to The Peace Frequency, and we hope you can tune in next week. Thanks, and have a good rest of the day.